This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is going to court, and I have the great pleasure of having two senior judges who would like you to know whether you're a plaintiff, a defendant, witness, or juror, what you can expect. They've recently retired, and they are California Superior Court judges Judge Richard Livermore, San Mateo County, and Judge Eugene Hyman, Santa Clara County. They have served the public well, each of them. I think Eugene served for 20-some-odd years, and Dick just finished 26 years. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. It's also, by the way, for those of you listening to the live program, we're doing this on Wednesday, January 25th, and it's our monthly Call a Lawyer night when you can talk with attorneys off the air at 1-800-525-9917 right now until 8 p.m., and that's for criminal law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate law, patent law, aviation law. And if you have questions for workers' compensation law, Robert Vermes will take your calls tonight until 8 p.m. and jot down his separate number, 949-584-2679, 949-584-2679. For family law, Janet Frankel will take your calls tomorrow, January 26th, from 9 to 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533. 415-362-9533. And for bankruptcy law, Leon Baer will take your calls tomorrow, January 26th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 800-477-3111. Dick, do you mind if I call you by Dick instead of Judge Livermore?
You may, certainly.
I'll refer to you as Judge, of course. And how about you, Gene? Do you mind?
Sure, of course.
Okay. I've known these two gentlemen for a long time. I consider them actually my friends. Let's do this. One of the things that I think you are anxious to tell people about as we start this, the very beginning of the program, is what if someone is charged with substance abuse, has been arrested with substance abuse? Dick, what suggestions would you have for that person who's going to be coming into court at some point?
Well, a little bit of my background in that area. For 21 years, I was the San Mateo County Drug Court Judge, both in the adult and the juvenile area. So I have a lot of experience in helping people with substance abuse. And I will say this, that the Superior Court of California has taken an enormous leap forward in recognizing the need to treat individuals with substance abuse problems. So treatment and recovery are the new mantra for the judicial system. And so that if anybody is finding themselves involved with the criminal justice system, they should know to expect that that is also going to mean that they're going to be involved in the organized treatment and recovery system. And there are many, many good resources out there. If you are resisting that in any way, there will be a place for you in one of the jails or other probation centers.
Not too much fun.
I don't know too many people who enjoy that. But the idea is that if you are finding yourself in trouble with the law, and it could be a second, third, or fourth DUI, or it could be something where you were have one or more offenses involving being under the influence in public, you should be seriously talking with your attorney, with your family, with agencies that can help you get into a good recovery program. And the more that you have taken the initiative to do that before you go to court, the better it will be, because we have district attorneys now who are very, very ready to listen to people who are seriously wanting to address a problem that's getting them in trouble with the law. We have very sophisticated defense counsel now who know how to represent people. And it's an enormous problem still. I would have to say that at least 80% of the people who are doing serious long-term time in our California prisons and jails have a substance abuse problem. And so our California justice system is now recognizing this. We have for many, many years now tried to develop sympathetic programs for people who really do want to get into and stay into recovery. If you don't, that's, of course, your choice.
And it's a great mistake.
Well,
it's a great mistake.
Addiction is a disease.
Yes, it is.
And people are inclined to intellectually say, okay, fine, I'll do this because it'll keep me out of jail. But they also have the disease of addiction, and that is something which can lead to further mistakes.
Well,
so
you've got to be, and
we're aware of that in the courts. We're aware of that. But all I'm saying is that the idea about tonight is that what can people do before they come to court when they're dealing with these kinds of issues? And, and that is a suggestion, is that if they can do anything to show that they're ready, willing, and able to get into a recovery program, the more the better.
Well, you were a great leader, Dick, in certainly making drug court a viable option for people and helping people to realize, hey, this is your opportunity not to go to jail, but to kind of help you make your life more worthwhile. And I know that from the standpoint that earlier in my career as a deputy DA, I was in front of you representing the people of the state of California. And I was very impressed the way you handled this in drug court. And I'm a great believer in people taking advantage of that. Eugene, you have done all kinds of different duties as a Superior Court judge down in Santa Clara County. One of the things that I think is very important for people is a good number of people, I think, and I may be wrong on this, but a good percentage of people who are summoned to come and be jurors are somewhat reluctant. They're going to think about, well, gee, do I have some hardship that I may be able to express to the judge? Maybe I'm biased, or maybe I'll come over being biased. What sage comments do you have for people who may be coming in, and a lot of people are going to come in to be a potential juror? I have wanted to be a juror myself, but who would want me, a deputy DA, to be on their panel, other than another deputy DA? But go ahead if you would.
Well, every trial is different. Every judge is different. Every lawyer is different. So, I mean, there are some commonalities, obviously, but there's also every experience is sort of new. My experience in terms of people in the courtroom is probably the majority of them is their first time, surprisingly enough. You know, California gets its jurors from driver's licenses and voting records, but it's random. And it's really interesting to see in terms of how people answer questions by raising their hands, at least initially, how many people are there multiple times and how many people are there maybe the first time, even though they've been California residents for years and years. So, you know, it's pretty scary to a person who's there for the first time. The majority of people, I think, start out not wanting to be there. And I think it's incumbent upon the judge in terms of the questioning process and the lawyers to make it welcoming, because my experience, and maybe Dick has had a different one, but my experience in terms of the jury trials that I did, it was a rare person after they had the experience that wasn't grateful for having the experience. I mean, every once in a blue moon, you get a person saying, you know, I never want to do this again. Most would say, even with overwhelming evidence, how difficult it was for them to participate and to make the decision. They were glad they had 11 other people helping them out. But my experience, again, is that most people were grateful that they had the opportunity to serve, even though it wasn't easy. There are those people that are determined to be excused, and they do it various ways, some by not allegedly not speaking English, some by allegedly having various kinds of prejudices, and there's no way to prove that a person isn't prejudiced if they say that they are. And even though they're under oath, sometimes they make up things that they had a bad experience with the same ethnic background as the defendant or whatever. And if a person is determined to demonstrate that they're not fair, neutral, and impartial, then they'll be excused.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's always the hardship. It depends upon how long the case is going to go. I mean, if it's going to be a 1 week or less, then the hardship is going to have to be substantial. On the other hand, if it's going to be a 3 or 4 month trial, then it's going to be easier because, you know, what you don't want to have happen is that juries are made up of people who are retired or work for the government, because that's not a well-represented opportunity for both the people as well as the defense to have a jury that's made up of the community.
Eugene, what if a potential juror says to you, well, Judge, if I'm on this panel and this looks like this is going to be a 10-day trial, I'm going to lose, I won't be paid by my employer. How have you reacted to that?
Well, you can't lose your job because doing jury duty.
Of course, you can't lose your job.
Right.
But what about not getting your pay?
Well, that's a problem. And then it depends. I mean, it depends upon what your occupation is and what you're making. I mean, I've had people claim a hardship that were making $400,000 a year.
Well, we know what that is. Yeah.
No, they're saying, hey, look, if I'm in sales, and if I can't be here, I'm not selling, and if I lose $50,000, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And no question, $50,000 is a lot of money.
Of course.
But, you know, when you're talking about the average Californian that's showing up for jury duty, the average Californian is not making $400,000 a year.
No, wait.
So they're not going to be very sympathetic.
What if you have someone who's a caregiver by this?
Oh, that's a different exemption.
How do you deal with that?
Well, here again, you know, they're under oath. And if they say, look, I'm taking care of my father who has dementia, and when I'm not taking care of my kids, I'm over at my parents' house dealing with him, you're going to have to accept them at their word. And, we don't have resources to do investigation. Mm-hmm. You know, if a person says that this is I'm a caregiver, they're excused.
Yeah.
And by law, if you're nursing, you're able to postpone. There's a difference between being excused
when
and
postponing. When you say nursing, what do you mean by that?
That you're nursing a child. You're a mother.
Child. Okay.
You're a mother nursing
right.
a child. By law, you're entitled to be deferred
yes.
while you are nursing. There's a difference. Let's say hypothetically you show up and you go, hey, look, I'm about to go on vacation. There's a difference between being excused and being deferred.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going on vacation, sure, we can reschedule you to come back on another date that's more convenient for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, when the questionnaires go out, that's the time to indicate that you're on vacation. And in every county that I'm aware of, if you indicate that you need to have you're requesting to have your date continued, they will.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always viewed judges are different, as I said at the beginning. I enjoyed the questioning process. Some judges do, some judges don't. I was rather thorough. You can pick a jury very quickly, or you can spend some time doing it. Mm-hmm. And some people would be upset with me because I asked questions a lot, and I was also very repetitious with certain questions. My feeling was that in a criminal case, the average person walked in thinking if the police made an arrest, if the DA filed, there was something there.
You've got to be guilty.
And when, you know, and I say, hey, look, you know, would you believe every police officer in terms of everything they said? You'd be surprised how everyone say it is impossible for a police officer to give false testimony. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that in this case the person would. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, is it possible? Or you have an open mind.
Yeah.
And it takes time to get people to understand, you know, the responsibilities. At least that's my thought. And it's up to, you know, again, it depends. Some judges like the lawyers to ask the bulk of the questions. My preference was to ask most of the can you be fair questions and then let the lawyers follow up based upon the answers that we initially had.
What we're going to do right now is I want to let you know that we are doing our monthly Call a Lawyer night, and we're going to get back to the judges in just a moment. And as we go into the second half hour of the program, I'll tell you who the attorneys are here. But the topic, here's the number for Call a Lawyer here at the station, and we're doing this on Wednesday, January 25th, 1-800-525-9917, and they'll be here until 8 p.m. That's criminal law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate law, patent law, aviation law. If you have a workers' compensation law question, Robert Vermes, who is a workers' comp attorney, will take your calls until 8 o'clock tonight. Here's his phone number, 949-584-2679, 949-584-2679. For Family Law, Janet Frankel will take your calls tomorrow, January 26th from 9 to 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533. 415-362-9533. For Bankruptcy Law, Leon Baer will take your calls tomorrow, January 26th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 800-477-3111. 800-477-3111. We will take your calls on the air with the two judges here in just a few minutes, and I'll give you that phone number in just a few minutes. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I have the great pleasure of having two judges who have been very much involved both with my career and this radio program. They are Judge Eugene Hyman from Santa Clara County. He recently retired as a judge after 20 years. And just a few weeks ago, my other guest here, Judge Richard Livermore of San Mateo County, retired after 26 years as being a Superior Court judge. So both of them have a lot of experience, and for those of you who are listening to the live program, in a few minutes I'll give you the phone number that you can call in and you can ask some questions or make comments, etc. Dick Livermore, let me ask you this. A lot of people are pro-per. We have the small claims court, we have the traffic court, and most people who go to small claims or traffic, obviously, they're in pro per. What comments do you have for them? What should they do to be prepared before going into court?
Well, first of all, those tend to be very high volume courts. And the more prepared that you are, the better it is. And the more brief you can be, the better it is. Mark Twain famously said many, many years ago in writing a letter to a friend of his, "I am so sorry this letter is so long. If I had had more time, it would have been shorter." And the point of that, of course, is that a good, succinct, and clear statement of what you want to accomplish and the preparation to show what it is that you want is very, very important, whether it be opposing a traffic matter where you've been called in on a citation, or whether it be either presenting or responding to a small claim. My experience is that I actually never sat in the high volume courts, either the traffic court or the small claims court, but as a Superior Court judge, I sat on the what's called the de novo trial or the small claims appeal. And the small claims appeal in court is basically a new trial before a Superior Court judge after you've already had your original trial. That's the way appeals are done in small claims. And so I've seen many, many, many small claims appeal, which are basically people coming in and trying their case all over again in front of a judge. I actually like them a lot because almost all of them were people appearing on behalf of themselves. There were, of course, some that had their own attorneys. But the key is that you want to be very clear. You want to be very organized. You do not want to throw the kitchen sink at something because it doesn't help your case. I've never seen a case where by bringing in absolutely every single last teeny bit of information, in other words, the New York telephone book on everything to do with your case, has helped. It is much better to synthesize, to be clear, and to focus in on the main points. Now, if you have trouble doing that, then there are self-help programs that can do that. And I would strongly suggest going on the websites for the local courts in the state. I've seen some really, really excellent
county by county.
Yes, that's right. The local county courts have increasingly sophisticated and increasingly good self-help programs. A lot of these cases can also be handled with the advice of good local community service legal clinics. Some are operated independently. Some are part of the Bar Association. They have many good call-in numbers. In San Mateo County, we had a wonderful Bar Association. Our administrator there, Deborah Kemper, is one of the really, really stars of our county. And so they run a really, really good operation there. And if you have some questions, they'd be able to help you with them. And just to tighten up your presentation, it's really important because these cases do not end up being given a lot of time.
Do you believe, with the experience you had as an appellate judge for small claims or traffic court, do you believe, Dick, what someone should do who's, whether they're going initially into small claims court or traffic court prior to the appeal, to be very critical about what they're doing and to write out ahead of time and edit and try to be as succinct that they can so that when they go in to small claims court and appear before the judge or the commissioner or the same with the traffic court, that they actually have prepared a carefully prepared, succinct script that they might read from? Do you find that that might be helpful?
Absolutely. This is not a place to go in and free skate. These statutes that run these programs are usually very, very well trod boards of the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges and commissioners and pro tem judges who handle these things are very, very familiar with the process. So it is all about the substance. It's all about mm-hmm. what it is that makes your case one that can be given the relief you're seeking.
And there is both in small claims court as well as certainly traffic court and probably also in an appeal situation, at least your experience in San Mateo County, there is a limited amount of time that someone has to present his or her case, is there not?
Of course. Yes. The amount of time can differ, and as Eugene said, there are a lot of different ways that a case can come down, and some cases actually will be given more time because of their very nature. However, it is not good to go in and go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also another part of that is that when a decision is made and handed down, you have to accept it. There are a lot of people who feel very uncomfortable and they don't like it and they say, but how can you do this? How can you do that? You just have to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And if the way that you want to move on is a filing appeal, you can do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the other thing, just for a second, is that a lot of people watch Judge Judy.
Yeah.
And they assume that's the way it goes down. Judge Judy is entertainment. And, you know, I've never heard of a judge or a commissioner or a pro tem lawyer who says, do I look stupid? I mean, not that you don't want to have done that. You can't, okay? I didn't do these assignments as a steady diet, but occasionally someone would call in sick or whatever, and I have it. It's a hard assignment because you want people to feel that they've been listened to.
Yeah.
But as Dick indicated, you have a number of people. The first thing that's done is everyone's asked to go out in the hallway and talk to one another because a lot of times they haven't.
And you're talking about small claims.
Yes,
right
yes,
now.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of times they have not talked to one another.
Sure.
They're all upset.
Well,
now
yeah.
Sometimes, of course, it's not safe for people to talk to one another.
Of course.
Assuming that it's safe, that's what you want people to do because a lot of times it can be resolved. Sometimes you've heard part of the case and you say, you know, I could go either way on this. Why don't you go out in the hallway and talk?
Yeah.
And, you know, being sincere, you're not trying to punt.
Yeah.
Everything is better if you decide yourself to resolve it.
Sure it is.
Having the judge make a decision, especially if you lose, isn't going to make you happy.
Yeah.
And even if you win, you may not be happy because the judge may not award what you think he or she should have awarded. So you're always better off in any venue if you can settle your case. And you may or may not be able to, but you should at least try.
Eugene brings up the issue of settlement. There are in many counties, I know San Mateo and Santa Clara both have them, they have these mediation services, which are populated by volunteer mediators. You can go in for a very, very reasonable, very small, sometimes even free amount of money, get your case heard before a voluntary mediator. And those people who provide very, very excellent, very professional services can help you a lot.
That's very important.
And they've been trained, but they're not lawyers usually.
Yeah, exactly.
We have this first half hour of Your Legal Rights is the statewide version recorded and then sent out to a number of stations in California, which will air the first half hour next week. So we have about a minute and a half left of the statewide version. Here's a question I want to pose to you, Eugene, going back to the jury situation. A friend of mine received, and this comes from one of the listeners, a friend of mine received a jury summons and quite accidentally he forgot about the summons. When he found the jury summons several months later, it was too late. The summons date had passed, but nothing happened to him. There were no sanctions or fines. Is that typical? If you ignore a summons, nothing happens? What comments do you have for that listener?
It depends on the county.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of sanctions. I mean, you can be brought in for contempt. You can have driver's license consequences. In this particular county where this listener was, there apparently wasn't a consequence. I mean, something to anticipate a question, what do you do if you do make a mistake? You contact the jury commissioner and say, look, I made a mistake. And if you're contacted, I guarantee something could be worked out. Now, that's different than you've been called to a courtroom and you don't show up.
Mm-hmm.
That is
mm-hmm.
serious.
Now, when you say that is serious, what do you mean?
That's contempt, possibly.
End up in jail?
Well,
likely,
but you could.
Yeah.
I mean, under the statute, you could. It's not likely. But in any event, and if you're on a jury and you don't show up, absent a really good reason, that's really, really serious.
So
if we're talking about a person who got a summons and didn't reply, didn't show up when they were called, I would call and say, look, I made a mistake, and they're going to work something out with you. But there'll be those counties, an occasional county, where there will be no consequence. But the thing is, you don't know.
That's right.
You don't know, because it might be that they were too busy on this particular occasion to do something, and they may not be on another occasion. So you don't know.
So in other words, it's always better to not put your head in the sand.
Exactly. You call up and say, look, I made a mistake, and they're not going to, they're not going to chew it off.
Yeah.
They're going to work with you.
Well, that's good to hear. Dick, we have just a few seconds more. What comments do you have about this listener's question about not showing up?
Yeah, I tell jurors when I'm doing jury selection that the worst thing that I have to do is to ask a juror to come back on an order to show cause as to why they did not honor their commitment to come in either initially or when they're asked to return. And I've had to do that a few times. It's always unpleasant. And it requires them to come in. They come in usually, as Eugene said, there's a very valid excuse, but sometimes there isn't, and sometimes the consequences are serious.
All right, everybody, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm going to give you the toll-free number in case you'd like to talk with my elite guests here who have served the public for many years. Judge Eugene Hyman was a judge in Santa Clara County for 22. Judge Richard Livermore for San Mateo County was a judge for 26. Here's the toll-free number if you have a question or comment or would like to talk with them. 1-866-798-8255. 1-866-798-8255. That's a toll-free number. It's also, we're doing this program, by the way, on Wednesday, January 25th. It is our normal and our monthly Call a Lawyer night. when you can talk with attorneys off the air. Let me tell you who's here at the station, and that number you might want to jot down, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For criminal law, we have Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law. He's also the chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. For landlord-tenant law, we have Sal Timpano. For employment law, Ellen Mendelson. For tax law, real estate law, he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, we have Ron Rohde. And for those of you who might have workers' compensation law questions, Robert Vermes, who's a workers' comp attorney, will take your calls until 8 o'clock this evening at 949-584-2679, 949-584-2679. If you have a family law question, Janet Frankel, also a certified specialist, will take your calls tomorrow. That's Thursday, January 26th from 9 to 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533, 415-362-9533. And if you're being chased by creditors, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will talk with you tomorrow, Thursday, January 26th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. No obligation whatsoever on your part at all with any of these attorneys. It's 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. And let me just tell you this, support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County, and for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. This program is funded by the San Mateo County Bar Association. It also has a lawyer referral service, and that number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county in California has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone for you, an experienced attorney for half an hour. And with minor exception in California, for half an hour consultation, you'll pay $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. It's a great public service. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. So let's take our first call from Harvey. Harvey, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Hal. Can you hear me?
I sure can. You're coming over very strong, Harvey. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me tell you about my experience. My first experience being called for jury duty was in the Alameda County Superior Court. I was called into the courtroom, but not up into the jury box to answer the questions there. It was some guy who was a young black dude who was accused of robbing a bunch of women at knife point. And so the defense lawyer asked the usual questions, have you ever been a victim of an attack? But no one, neither the defense nor the prosecutor nor the judge, asked anyone, do you know the defendant? These are the list of witnesses. Do you know them? They just sort of relied on the fact that people had been chosen randomly out of the population to assume that no one would know them. So I think that's definitely a defect there. What really impressed me was the defense lawyer was this really angry woman, and whenever something went against her in the courtroom, she would clench her fist and go, whatever, you know.
Harvey, let me get some comments for you both about your comment about no one asked, do you know who this, have you ever contacted this defendant or not, et cetera, et cetera. Turn your radio back up so we can get some comments for you. Dick, do you have some comments for Harvey?
Well, I certainly do. And I actually always use the questions that are given by the California Rules of Court. And they include in that question list do you know anybody? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I made it my habit to always use those questions. But you can kind of go over a little bit. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I had a very, very tough case involving some very, very serious criminal charges. And the defense attorney asked his client if he had any of the members of the jury pool in his Facebook account.
In his Facebook
account? In his Facebook account. So he went through it, and sure enough, juror number one was in his Facebook account, and he made the fatal error, and I don't mean fatal literally, but it was very, very bad for him, of calling that juror while he was a defendant in the case.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So
while the case was ongoing?
Absolutely. And so this is an example of how you can really get and the person who was called said, I must have friended this person years and years and years ago. I certainly don't know him. I would have told you if I knew him. And it was one of those people who had a very active Facebook account with hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people in it. And the defendant called one of the jury members. So you get into a lot of different issues in jury selection. But to answer your question, Harvey, I always would ask the question if you knew anybody. And hopefully they wouldn't be calling them in their Facebook
We would hope not.
Account.
We would hope not. How about the defense attorney, as he described, I believe he described the defense attorney who was a woman, pounding her fist on the desk? How do you like that? Is that effective?
That has less to do with jury selection than courtroom demeanor. And
does that really make a point for the judge?
You know,
or
actually,
the jury? To pound your fist on the desk?
In a jury case, the judge is not the fact finder, it's the jury.
Yeah.
And within certain bounds, certain conduct is allowed. However, that sort of theatrics usually doesn't work.
A little
that well.
Too much. A little bit too much. Okay, we've got Trudy. Welcome to your legal rights.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm with Volunteers Investigating Illegal Foreclosures in San Mateo County, and we have noticed that when a house is sold by foreclosure, the judge allows the new buyer to evict the homeowner, even if the case sale was illegal. And it's like, I can't foreclose on Chuck's house because Chuck does not owe me money, and I'm not the trustee of trustee for Chuck's lender. I took the precaution of writing this out, so I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I fake the documents the way robo-signers do, I could use fake documents to sell Chuck's house, and the buyer could use unlawful detainer to evict him. So the problem is that judges only look at the trustee's deed of sale, which is just a receipt, instead of making sure that the house was sold by someone who was actually authorized to sell the house. So my question is, how can the homeowner convince a judge to look at the fraudulent documents and declare the sale void so the homeowner does not get evicted after an illegal foreclosure?
That is a
Trudy,
great question.
This is Judge Livermore. I hope you're not asking about a case that's currently pending because, of course, even though that Eugene and I are both retired judges, we cannot talk about cases that are currently pending. But in general, there are two different things that are going on. One is a suit for possession. If there's a more statutorily driven action in the state of California than unlawful detainer, I can't think of it. It's very, very, very statutory, and it's just about possession.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely correct there. However, the other part of what you're talking about is a very, very serious, could be even criminal action for fraudulent transactions damaging somebody. So, for instance, if their title is either clouded or infringed upon by this illegal action, and what you're telling me about just hypothetically is a very, very serious and could in fact be charged as a criminal offense. But that would be handled differently. Yeah. The criminal side would be handled by the district attorney, but you can also get good legal counsel to represent the person who is so horribly damaged in a civil case, which is not the same thing as unlawful detainer. So
I certainly, Trudy, in terms of what you're talking about, if you have found evidence that there has been some fraudulent paperwork done, certainly one of the things that you would want to do, and you're talking about San Mateo County. I've been a San Mateo County deputy DA for 32 years. I think one of the things that you might do is with the assistant, your assistant, help the person who perhaps is the victim here to file a complaint with the district attorney's office, consumer protection unit, for one thing. You might want to also call the local police department and have requested an investigation be opened up. But this is something that obviously takes a lot of time. We cannot give you too much direction, certainly on the radio program, but I think we've given you something that hopefully will be of help to you. Thank you very much for calling.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, this is Your Legal Rights, and we have Thomas. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
I'm calling from Mountain View, and I have a question about traffic court. I was given a summons to appear at the court in the county of San Mateo because I was photographed at an intersection not coming to a complete stop.
Oh, you were the guy.
Yes. So this was new to me that such a thing existed.
Yeah.
And I was also astounded by the amount of the fine, which was, I think it was $490.
Wow.
And so I looked at the video on the website, and sure enough, I didn't come to a complete stop. However, it occurred after 1 o'clock in the morning. There was no traffic at all around. I'm the only person on the road, and I recall at night because I drive a diesel, and I was on my way home from San Francisco, almost out of gas, and I was frantically looking for a place to fuel my car. So I was stopping at every exit on the way back from San Francisco, and that was when it occurred. So my question is, since I didn't pay it immediately because I'm currently unemployed, I just have part-time income, actually, as a shared ride driver. It's increased. It's now increased to something like $850.
Do you have a judgment against you, Thomas?
I don't think so.
Okay. There is a pending, something pending, and you are not working right now?
That's correct.
Yeah. You know, my one of my suggestions is, since this is in, you're saying, in San Mateo County, you might want to contact the lawyer referral service of the San Mateo County Bar to see if there might be someone who you can talk to, a criminal defense attorney. You might also, because you are unemployed at this point, you might want to contact the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County, who might be able to be of some assistance to you and try to be of some help to you before this thing continues to get bigger and bigger. Eugene, do you have some comments for Thomas here?
Well, I think, Chuck, your advice is good. The only thing that I would add is if he doesn't want to go that route, he can always go down to court and make a request, fill out a request to appear in front of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to explain to the judge in terms of what's going on, then it's up to the judge or a hearing officer. That assumes, of course, that he's guilty. In terms of being able to, number one, consideration for reduction of the fine, and number two, to allow a payment schedule. So that's another possibility in addition to the advice that you offered.
Dick,
okay.
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to add, I really appreciate the advice that was given earlier about preparing your case, because I only have ever gone to traffic court one time, and that was to try and get a traffic ticket reduced or a speeding ticket reduced. And I was totally unprepared for the volume of cases, and it was just sort of boom, bam. I opened my mouth, wasn't allowed to continue, and my case was done.
Oh, boy.
And I said, okay, well, that was a total waste of time. So,
okay, let me, Thomas, get some comments from Judge Livermore for you. Dick, what comments do you have?
Well, there have been some problems with these automatic ticket-generating systems that counties and communities pay a lot of money for.
Yeah.
And there have been some that have been able to have been reviewed because technologically maybe they weren't operating correctly. That's a whole different question.
Sure.
And it sounds like, Thomas, that you found by looking at the video that, yes, it was you. Yes, it was correct that the stop was rolled, et cetera, et cetera. So really this is not going – I thought you were going to go to the issue of whether there's going to be something done either as part of legislation or part of a community
– I don't think you have that.
About these types of devices. I think they're here to stay. But the remedies, which Chuck mentioned and Eugene mentioned, I think should be explored by you. And I know as a judge, if you were to present to me what you said, I would be very happy to make out an equitable solution that could address those issues.
Yeah.
Well, see, the other problem that hasn't been mentioned is that by not taking care of it, then potentially that might have a consequence with respect to a hold on your license or something like that. It may or may not. So you really just don't want to put it off. You need to do something.
You got to do something. Right. Good luck to you, Thomas.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, and I hope you're able to follow through on this. Again, everybody, we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, January 25th. This is our normal monthly last Wednesday of the month, Call a Lawyer Night. You're welcome to call and speak to one of a number of attorneys. That number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Here at the station, KALW Public Radio, in the conference room, we have for criminal law, Jeff Hayden. For landlord-tenant law, we have Sal Timpano. For employment law, Ellen Mendelson. For tax law, real estate law, he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, Ron Rohde. Again, they are here. That's 1-800-525-9917. They'll be here till 8 p.m. If you have a workers' compensation case question, Robert Vermes will be available at his office until 8 p.m. tonight. His number, 949-584-2679. If you have a family law question, Janet Frankel, who is also a certified specialist, Robert Vermes is a certified specialist. She'll take your calls tomorrow. That's Thursday, January 26th from 9 until 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533, 415-362-9533. If you're being chased by creditors, Leon Baer, who's in L.A., will take some calls from you tomorrow, Thursday, January 26th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. By the way, this is all great public service that these attorneys are performing. There is no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is not an attempt to get cases for these attorneys. They are here to give you help, and that's what this is all about. This program, Your Legal Rights, and my guests here on the program, the two judges who have recently retired, and the Call a Lawyer lawyers are here to try to help you. So take advantage of it if you can. The next person we have is David. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a wannabe lawyer for a long time who secretly has always desired to be arrested and go to jail so I could become a jailhouse lawyer where I'm sure. I'm calling to correct a misimpression I'm sure your guests inadvertently let lie about the repercussions for ignoring a summons to jury duty. When you get a summons, everyone should know this, you're instructed to contact by phone twice the Alameda County to find out if your pool is serving. Now, I haven't. I have only anecdotal experience, but in my 40 years of living here, I've maybe been called 8 times, and only twice have I ever had to actually go in at all. So the person who told you that they'd heard that their friend was just able to get away with ignoring the jury summons may have had a friend who simply won the lottery.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that may be right.
Yeah, yeah. I can. This is Judge Livermore. I can certainly agree with that. It is just really, really bad advice and really bad policy to ignore those summons. They are legal summons. It is the law of the state of California. So
yeah, but you never know whether you were called or not if you've lost your thing. It's just
on that day they didn't
need a panel, which is most of the time.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right, and thank you. If there was any, let's say
you made it sound easy to ignore it, easier than it.
Oh no!
No!
You misunderstood,
yeah.
David.
Yeah, you misunderstood big time.
Well, I know you guys feel that way, but you didn't mention the procedure, which means that there's no way you can ever know that you actually got away with anything.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, David.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Very nice.
Okay. All right. We have Mazai. Is this Mazai? Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, this is Mazai. Thank you for having me on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I have a traffic-related question. A week ago, I was caught in the carpool lane, and I was given a citation for violating the carpool lane. It was just myself. So recently I went online and I had paid the infraction. It was about $490. Mm-hmm. This was in the San Jose area, on 880. Now my question, I have a two-part question. I'm just unclear on whether or not I need to see the judge and if I need to go to traffic school, or even if I just have to go to the courthouse at all. So if I could get some, if that could be explained to me, I would be really grateful.
Masai, if you were given a citation, I would strongly suggest that you read every word of that citation. And if it is a notice to appear and you assigned an agreement to appear, then you appear on the date and time set on that.
Yeah.
If they say there is no appearance date, but if you want one and you want to call in and put one on calendar, then you may do that, but you're not required to. If they are saying that you can pay your fine and that's that, but if you want to appeal, there's another number. So in other words, usually the instructions are very, very clear as to what your options are, and so I would just take a very, very careful read of your citation.
I agree with everything that Dick said. I would add just a couple of things. Number one, my recollection, and I'm not giving you legal advice, is that driving in a carpool lane is not a moving violation. It's another type of violation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, frankly, that you can even go to traffic school. But even if you were to go to traffic school, you'd have to pay the bail amount to be able to go. So, I don't think it's a moving violation. That's number one. Number two, if you are interested, if you think that you're in a position where the amount of the bail, the fine, is a severe hardship, that's going to require that you have to appear in front of a judge in order to have consideration for the issuance of something less than that. But as a general rule, those kinds of violations mm-hmm. don't require an appearance. But as Judge Livermore said, when you sign the ticket, you're promising to take care of it or to appear. So you have to do something. So you do have an option of paying it. You have an option mm-hmm. of contesting it. You have an option of making an appearance and requesting that it be reduced. But I would encourage you to research it. I don't think it's a moving violation.
And as Judge Livermore suggested to you, you really mm-hmm. need to read that citation very carefully and make sure you understand it. So good luck to you.
Thank you very much
for calling. This will be our last call, and it'll be, I guess, Harvey's back. Harvey, you had another question?
No, just going to continue.
Go ahead. Very, very quickly. We're nearly out of time, Harvey. Go ahead very quickly.
Oh, next time I got called for jury duty, I just stayed in the assembly room. We just watched Jerry Springer felt like he died and went to the first level of hell. So I received two more jury summonses. I just ignored them, never even received a follow-up. But I did serve on a federal court jury, and it was like night and day. You know, not only did they pay you four times as much, but the judge, like during the voir dire, you know, they asked me, do you know any government officials? I mentioned Greg Harper, chairman of AC Trends. He mentioned that the judges are much better in federal court. And the judge liked that comment. He said to the recorder, make a note of that. And, yeah, so federal court is much nicer than state court. And I understand you're in a rush here, so I won't hold you up. That's okay. More then.
All right, Harvey. Thank you very much for calling back. Any comments that you want to make about federal court?
Well, federal court is one-third the size of the entire California judiciary system. In other words, California has the largest judicial system in the whole country. I think there are just around 600 federal judges.
Throughout
the entire United States at the trial level, and there are over 1,800 just in the state of California. So you have a large difference. And, of course, federal judges are appointed for life. So they can do things with a little more of their own way than us California trial judges who really have to learn how to do compulsory figure skating and not free skating.
Yeah. Let me just, Joanne, let me just let everybody know the Call of Lawyers will be here for a few more minutes, 1-800-525-9917. We have come to the end of the program. By the way, if you want to hear the entire program, it is available as a free podcast, and that is at www.klw.org/RSS, www.klw.org/RSS. I want to thank both of you very much for joining me on the program and joining us, I should say, the audience, as well as I consider myself a member of the audience with you. California Superior Court judges, recently retired Judge Richard Livermore, San Mateo County, Judge Eugene Hyman, Santa Clara County. I hope you enjoy your retirements. Have some fun. Don't work too hard. Next time on Your Legal Rights, the topic is estate planning. And the question is, leaving your home to your child or children in a will or a trust, will Proposition 13 tax basis be passed on from you to your child or children? My guest will be John Martin, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding has been provided by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution, as we do have some stations, public radio stations outside of California. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.